This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to another, what I know is going to be a fantastic episode, because they're all fantastic, of Bells with Books. I am one of your hosts. I'm a co-host, Miranda. And of course, I am always and forever joined by the lovely Bianca.
Hello!
Hello!
That one sounded more like a wolf howl.
That one kind of did, but it sounds right. Are you proud of me, though? I threatened her before that I was going to start saying her name like the Brits say Bianca, and she says, please, no.
No, don't do that. There's one guy, I attend like webinars, like educational stuff for my work, mm-hmm. like once or twice a week.
Right.
And there's one British guy who does like a good chunk of some of the webinars for one of the organizations, and whenever I put anything in chat, he goes, "Oh, hey, Bianca." I'm like,
"Bianca,
oh, no." But he recognizes my name now, because I guess I'm the only Bianca that ever logs in chat.
You could be Mirandia.
That is true.
We've had discussion, because we were talking about people with weird names, and me, you, and our friend Susan, we have this private chat, and we were talking about funny names. I was like, listen, I ain't got no room to talk. Mirandia over here.
Susan's the only one with a normal name in that chat.
Yeah. It's okay.
What have you been up to, Miranda?
What have I done?
You've been teaching English.
I have been teaching English, yes. I have been teaching English to some of the kids here in my village. I have been doing that. That's been fun.
I'm glad. That sounds like fun. I think that'd be something fun to do.
The first lesson, the girl came and she kept like rubbing her hands on her legs. I was like, are you okay? She's like, nervous. She was telling me like, I'm very nervous. I was like, shoot, me too. I don't know what's about to come out of my mouth. So, and then every now and then, except for a couple lessons, I've had to like legitimately look something up. And listen, guys, I'm an educated woman. But they teach them British English over here.
And like, the other including day, the spelling?
The other day they did something, and I was like, that is not right. And I was like, wait. And I looked at her. I said, before I tell you this is wrong, let me look something up, because in American English, we do things just a little bit different sometimes. And I don't want to tell you it's wrong, and your teacher be like, no, it is right. So I taught her the difference, and I was like, okay, so in American, no. This is not quite what we would do, but it is correct for your workbook. And then I wrote her like British English versus American English. And we're making a list of when we come across something different. So,
which when they speak, when mm-hmm. like when they're learning English and speaking English, mm-hmm. is it like, do they have a slight British accent at all? Or is it just a Czech accent?
So it depends. A lot of times it is just like a heavy, like your European, like what country, like for American, I don't think this makes it sound dumb. Some people would be like, you sound dumb. No. But like, you know how if you've ever met somebody from Europe where you're not quite sure which country they're from, you think you know, but you're not sure.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they have. However, the exception to that is, for example, my really good friend, Juliana, she's Slovak, and her English is like, when I met her for the first like month and a half that I knew her, I thought she was British. I genuinely thought she was British. Her husband's British. So I assumed she was as well, because she not only learned British English, but right after she finished school, like their version of high school, she went to London, and she worked on the underground and was a nanny for years, like 10, I think she lived in London for over 10 years, 10, 12 years. And that's where she met her husband. And then they eventually came back to Slovakia, and they were our neighbors in Košice. And she sounds like she's British. Like when we go visit them, Caden does something and she's like, oh, you cheeky little monkey.
Well, which, and I'm sure living with a British person.
Right.
influences that as well.
Right. So she does, because she's one that she went and lived there. And then there's a young lady that we knew that used to work at one of the coffee houses we attended often. She left and went to school in London. And so when the first time she came back, she'd been gone for like 6 months. And when she came back to Košice, she also had a British accent. So I think it just varies. So she's going and spending every day around British people.
Yeah. But
most of the time here, it's just you have an accent. Where are you from exactly?
Kind of. Yeah. Thing.
But I was really baffled. I think you'd be interested to know this really quickly. So I was asking her, like, they have a workbook and they have a textbook that they work out of. And so I was asking her, I was like, so are you graded on your work and your workbook? And she was like, yes. And they do partner things. Like one of the things that I helped her with the other day, she had to make a list of questions that she was going to do. She had to conduct an interview with a friend. So it was a partner thing. And they were supposed to interview each other in English about their school canteen. But she said they don't, however, get graded, other than when they do those little partner kind of things, they don't get graded on their speaking.
Yeah.
Like, they don't ever really get graded on their speaking.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, because you know, as someone, you and I have both used Duolingo now for a lot of years. Like, I can read it, and on Duolingo, I'm like eighth in my test, and I'm doing great, but then you ask me to speak it, and I struggle.
Yeah, because I think it's also because you and I are such heavy readers that we're able to recognize words based on context more. That when we're reading it, when we're reading it, we get the gist of what is being said. But then if we go to speak it, we're like, oh, man,
I can't. I struggle sometimes with the speaking bar because I'm not actively working. I'm not going to a class to learn where like I'm actively speaking it with people. So I struggle. So I really was baffled by that they make English compulsory, but then they're not. A lot of these schools aren't grading them on their speaking ability. And I'm like, well, that doesn't compute in the world. Like, honestly, I think, like, I have another person that I'm going to start teaching soon, and she's flat told me she's older. She's not in school. Like, she's a mom, grandmother. She wants to better her English. She's like, I learned in school like many, many years ago, and I don't use it. She's like, so I don't want you to teach me grammar like you're teaching the village kids. I just want to learn conversational English. And I was like, hot damn. Because that's easy. I mean, that's literally like, okay, well, let's go for coffee and have conversation. And then you politely correct the person. And when their word is wrong or they don't know the word. But yeah. So I think it's funny that they're like so focused on teaching them the grammar of it that like same with Duolingo, like they're so focused on teaching me like you're talking about a man, you need to say this. Okay. Yes. But how do I actually say it? So yeah. I don't know. Since you learn languages as well, I thought you might find that interesting. So.
Well, speaking of speaking.
Yes.
I just want to tell everybody listening if Miranda's talking and like expecting me to say something back to her today, both Miranda and I are suffering with severe allergies right now. Yes. So just bear with us.
I feel I've like been every fighting podcast, this for like
a good month now. I'm getting tired of it.
I feel like every podcast I've listened to lately has been like, please bear with me. I'm sick. Or please bear with me. I have an allergies. And I'm like, same.
I don't think I've breathed through my nose since like Valentine's Day, honestly. Through your nose.
Right.
I have become a mouth breather.
Oh, God. I was explaining to my mom. I was like, you don't understand. I was like, I literally live like there's a field. And then I live on the main road as well. So like I have semis come by, and if you could see the amount of dust and pollen that is on my car like I could rinse my car off daily. And then it's just like coated again. And it's dry here. So it's the opposite of if you remember like where you and I used to both live in Alabama. It was like that, but like super humid. So imagine like that, but super dry.
Yeah.
So yeah. And also this is my first year living like here. So I'm getting adjusted to the local flora.
Not the flora and the fauna.
Right, the flora and the fauna are damaging me. I cannot breathe.
Well, anyway. In other news, and more specifically book news.
That's what we're here for.
The Empyrean series, a.k.a. what everyone calls Fourth Wing.
Yeah.
We got a book update for number 3. The title is going to be called Onyx Storm, and it is coming out in January 2025. You can pre-order it now, everybody.
Man, she's pumping these out, though. Like, I ain't going to lie. I'm not mad at it, but, like...
Well, it'll be, like, a year and a half since Iron Flame came out when this one comes out.
Yeah.
I think we just got spoiled because she basically wrote 1 and 2 together and they were published in the same year. So she was like, here you go.
Well, yeah, because I don't think, no, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but nobody knew who she was. And I don't think she expected to happen. I mean, listen, as a writer, that's your hope, right? You hope that you blow up and you become like a Nora Roberts, Colleen Hoover, Dean Koontz overnight. I mean, that would be my hope. However, I don't think she expected that. So she was one that had already planned out 1 and 2. And then she's like, oh, wait, what? What?
Well, and now she's doing like these big speaking gigs and going to all these events. And you can tell like she doesn't really want the spotlight like for herself.
Yeah. I would
like
agree.
That's not what she's there for. Like she's very sweet. I'm not knocking her or anything, but you can just tell that's not her comfort. That's not what she wants to do.
Also, the Y has been eliminated.
Finally.
Listen, 15 minutes later. I'm not even lying. I've never seen a fly so big. So he dip dived at my head while Bianca and I were like trying to start recording. And I was like, I can't deal with this whole podcast. He's going down. And then he went to the corner of my podcasting room and just stayed there for a minute. And then as we started talking, he dip dived at me again. I was like, no, you're going down. I can't. Sorry, animal lovers. He's a problem. Anyway. Yeah, but I agree with you. I think she's one of those that like, maybe she's not used to the spotlight. And listen, I can imagine, like, I've not talked to the amount of people that she has when she's on stage listening to her. I've never had that many. But the few that I have, like, it's nerve-wracking. Like, yeah, I mean, you've come and watched some of the talks I've done. And the one, I had, like, 200 people, and I, like, was about to pee my pants. Like, the whole time I was up there, I was like, there's no one out there. Just pretend there's no one out there. There's no one out there. Or, like, I pick one person. Like, I know you're there. I usually pick Susan, because I know Susan's there. And I just look at Susan, like, the whole time.
Hey, I get it. I've presented at 2, about to be 3, library. I've got another conference this week I'm going to present at. It's nerve-wracking every time. Even when I have like my script written out of what I'm going to say, it's still, you get the sweats, you get nervous.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And everybody's always like, oh, because a lot of the events that I speak at, like I go in cosplay and then I change to something on stage and then I either change to something else or I go back on into my cosplay. And I've had so many people be like, you do so many outfit changes. I'm like, if you knew the amount of sweat that is on that outfit that just came onto the stage with me. This is why.
Well, and being nervous, I'm sure that the guy that you're following, Oliver James, is super nervous to be putting himself out there like this.
Oh, absolutely. We've talked about Oliver a few times. For those of you who don't remember, Oliver is the gentleman that has decided that he's going to teach himself to read for various different reasons. And I think he explains that better. So please go follow him. He explains like why he didn't learn to read as a kid. And I think he also is dyslexic. I'm not trying to diagnose him. I believe I'm correct in that. I could be wrong. But he's decided now as an adult, I think his wife is a reader as well. And so he wanted that and he wanted to find that. And I just happened to find him on live the other day because he'll actually go on live and he'll read, like to his followers. And, he was reading, I believe he has started Harry Potter series and he was talking about that. And then in another live, he was, just at the library hanging out and a woman came and was like, either recognized him or asked him what he was doing. And he's like, well, I've decided at this age, I'm going to learn how to read. It would, you know, it would make my life better. And I just think he's been asked to talk a few times. He's been asked to speak on teaching himself to read. And I think what he's doing is so phenomenal. And I'll probably continue to give updates on him because I know a lot of people that as adults, they're like, well, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. And they just kind of like shut down. And he is taking a skill that, by the way, as someone that has tried to teach someone else to read, it is hard to teach someone to read. Let alone he's teaching himself to read. Like, I just...
Well, see, I always have the fear because my mom would read to me literally every night as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I just memorized what was on the page, not necessarily what the words were, but I knew when that page was done. Mm-hmm. So this irrational fear I have is that I never actually learned to read. I just memorized a bunch of words to quote Nick from New Girl.
Well, honestly, mine is very similar. Like when I was very little, my mom and my grandmother read to me and I had a favorite book series, which was The Little Critter. I don't know if you did those.
Yes, I love Little Critter.
Little Critter is like my all time favorite and Little Critter is how I learned to read. And it's kind of the same as you because obviously I had a lot of them, but I had like a few that I would like continuously have them reread and reread and reread. And I think I also did the same. I memorized the words and eventually I noticed the words on the other pages and I just started putting them together. So I think my learning to read is that I did memorize words and was like, oh, I know that word. Oh, I know that word. And then just like you said, we as readers, like you were talking about earlier in teaching English, we have learned to like kind of piece things together.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I did the same though. I memorized. And so I don't know exactly how he's doing it, but I don't know. And he's doing it with grace, you know, because that's hard. And I think it takes a lot of guts to stand up and be like, I don't know how to read. You know, some people are like, oh, I don't like to read or I don't enjoy reading. And okay, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I'll never understand that.
Like, I'm not being mean to those people, but I don't understand it because, like, I enjoyed reading growing up. My mom was a reader. My grandmother was a reader. My husband is a reader. Our son is a reader. He struggles a little bit more because he does, he's on the spectrum. He has dyslexia with that. So, like, he struggles, but he still enjoys reading. The kid loves books. So, I don't understand people when they're like, I don't like reading. I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand, but I'm wondering if some people that don't enjoy reading either like those people we've talked about before that can't picture it in their head.
Yeah.
So they don't know how to picture it, or like Oliver, maybe they don't know how to, and they just don't want to admit that. So I think it's like, I don't know. I find him fascinating and really, I don't even know him and I'm proud of him. Does that make sense? Like, like that's a big deal. That's a big thing to, you know, be a man and be like, I am an adult and guess what? I'm about to admit to the whole world I can't read. But I'm going to learn. I thought that was really cool. And he's actually picking some really good books. He's done The Outsiders. He did Anne Frank's Diary. Like, he's picking some really good ones to learn to read. So...
The last bit of book news that we're going to cover is one of our, I'll say favorites, because I've liked everything I've read from her.
Yeah.
Leigh Bardugo had her new book come out, The Familiar. It has, of course, taken book talk by storm. Everyone's talking about it. The cover is gorgeous. I cannot get over the cover.
Stunning.
It's like, it's a hand and it's like, I don't know if it's a male or female, but the arm is wearing like French poofy garb. I don't know how, like something like Marie Antoinette like would wear.
Bourgeois. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. But it's like a black background and the hand is like super duper, like see-through vampire white.
It's a historical fantasy.
It's got old gothic script on there.
So that's why. It is set during the Spanish Golden Age. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt
Okay.
you. But that's why the Gothic script and the description, it is historical fantasy set during the Spanish Golden Age. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm super excited to eventually. I have not bought it. I thought about ordering it, but I was like, no, let me hold off because I have so many books right now.
Ugh, same.
I need to get through what's on my shelf a little bit before I add more.
Like, it's a good problem to have.
It's just sometimes you get overwhelmed
Oh, yes, absolutely.
because I'm like personally, I don't know what you've been reading, Miranda, but I feel like the last like six books I've chosen really big books. And it's gotten to the point where I'm just kind of tired at the end of it. And I'm like, man, I need a
Oh,
break.
yeah. That's why I was telling you, I can't decide if I want to do the familiar next or if I've been saying this for months that I promised Sabrina that I'm going to, because I genuinely have interest in going back and revisiting that world, the Shadowhunters
Yeah.
world. But I keep saying, like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. I've even said it here, I'm gonna do it. And like I keep finding something that like pulls me a different way.
Yeah.
So I'm either going to, because listen, I'm a mood reader. Sometimes it happens. So I hate promising. But in true honesty, I'm either going to do The Familiar next, or I'm going to go do the first book. Well, in the order Sabrina gave us. Let me
Okay.
rephrase that. Yeah.
Yeah, because
The
she didn't she amend it so you're doing the same thing I am?
I am now. Yeah, she gave
Okay.
me at first, she was like, you can go this path, or you can go this path. And I was like, well, which path do you want me to go? And then she came back and was like, no, do this one. So I think I am actually doing the same one that you are doing. So.
Okay. As I am currently, she gave me Chain of Gold next.
Okay.
I probably will get to it. Probably in May.
Okay.
Because I once again, my interlibrary loan requests all came in at once. So
It
I got to
never
get through those.
fails, which made
I was
you just
like,
kind
can we please space these out?
you would think that those systems would like look and go, oh, we just gave her one. Let's wait. But no, that's kind of like you just reminded me. I probably need to check my NetGalley because it's bad at like alerting me. So I probably have like four books on NetGalley, and I've struggled through the last two. So maybe I should just stop for a minute.
Yeah, give yourself some breathing room.
Well, it's pressure because you know when you request something in NetGalley, you have a very specific date that they want this done by.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is. It's pressure. I will say for the familiar, have you seen the PR boxes that some of these book talkers and
Yes.
oh, I'm so jealous.
They
It's
look really,
very,
really good.
it's very like dark and macabre and gothic, and this box is just so beautiful. And I need it in my life.
Well, we are getting some things in our life. We're going to swap up to Adaptation Minute, which will probably be quite a few minutes. We have a lot to discuss in this
We do
segment.
actually. I didn't think we did. We were like, oh, there's nothing. And then we were like, wait a second.
Well, we got word that The Adventures of Amina al-Safari has been optioned for adaptation through Flip Narrative, and it's going to be a television series. I personally have not read this, but it has been on my TBR for ever since it came out.
Same, same.
Like, I know I'm going to love it, but once again, it's a thick book. You
Sorry.
can't be yawning now.
I know. I was like trying to hide it, and it just. I know,
We're
right?
like 20 minutes in, and Miranda's like, oh, no, it's nap time. Oh, I think you cut out. Are you there?
No, I'm here. It's that fly. He's
Okay. I thought you
He
said he was vanquished.
zapped me. That's what he did. I vanquished him and it sucked all the energy out of me, just vanquishing the fly.
But we don't know where it's going to be yet for TV.
No.
We don't know what streaming service or channel or what. We
Well,
just know
because
it's going
it's
to be a
only
TV
been
series.
optioned, correct? So there is the possibility, and I hate when this happens, that it doesn't actually happen.
Let me double check, because I saw this like forever ago. Like, it was literally a day after we recorded last that I saw this. So let me see if there's any new update. No, it just says options still. Okay.
So unfortunately, I mean, most things that have been optioned within the last, I'd say, 2 years actually take place. But the sad thing is, optioned means it's possible it may not happen.
Yeah. Something that is happening that we just got a trailer for is Bridgerton Season 3, Part 1.
Season 3. Now, you remind me, I've read none of the books.
No.
I am through book 4.
Which I know they're not doing the TV series in the order of the book series. So have you read Colin and Penelope's book?
Listen, here's the problem. They all start running together. They're good. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed them. There's a couple of them that I'm like, are you kidding me? This was longer than it needed to be. But let's see. Well, season one is book one. I'll go ahead and tell you that. I know for sure.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Season one is book one. It's just that they're kind of like intermingling. And I'm pretty sure season two was the same people. Meaning like same people from the book. Because season two was which two?
That was the oldest. Crap, what's his name?
Anthony. Okay, yes, so that's book two. And then three is Penelope. Yeah, is Penelope and
Colin.
Yes.
I am very excited for this. I need my friends to lovers story arc already.
Maybe not. Maybe it's book four. Okay, so this is where they're changing it up. Book three is Sophie and Jesus Christ, give me a second. Sophie and I'm over here on Goodreads, like, I know I've read this book.
There's someone listening to us right now, like screaming their device.
No, I've done that. I've been listening. Like, I was listening to a podcast the other day where they were getting the information about something wrong, and I was like, "No!" Like they could hear me. And I probably busted everyone's eardrums too. Anyway, it is Sophie Beckett and Benedict.
Okay.
Okay.
I met Sophie in the show? That name doesn't sound familiar. Like, I obviously know Benedict, but the name Sophie does not ring a bell.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'll get back.
Well, anyways, part one is coming out May 16th. So I'm sure all of us girlies are going to be gathered around the TV May 16th. And then they've officially said that the last thing he told me is getting a season two. And everyone that had read and or watched the show was like, what do you mean season two? Like, the season was the book. Evidently, Laura Dave is going to write a sequel.
So okay.
Is going to be season two.
I have not watched the show, but I did read the book. And we talked about it here.
Yes.
So when they said season two, I was like, excuse me, what?
Yeah, no, she's writing another book, so that will coincide, basically.
Which, like I said, I didn't watch the show, but you read the book too, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a whole episode about it.
Oh, duh. Listen, I knew we talked about it here, but I couldn't remember if it was one we had read separately or together. Listen.
No, that was a whole episode.
We're a couple of years in now. Come on now. Gimme. Anyway, but the book does kind of end where you're like, well, there could be more.
I mean, I guess. I was happy with the ending.
I mean, same. I was like, oh, okay, that clears everything up. So
but I guess if the fans want it, give them what they want.
I mean, yeah. Will I read book two? Yes. Will you read book two? Probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So those are like the newest things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of personal updates for me. I have watched Shadow and Bone season one, but my husband had not. And then I had never watched season two. So Brad and I are currently watching Shadow and Bone on Netflix. I am enjoying it just as much as I did the first time. We're almost through season one. I think we're on episode 7, if I remember correctly.
There's only like 10 episodes, I believe. Yes. I did watch when I watched season one. I also have not watched season two, and I don't remember why. And a lot of people are going to be mad because if you remember, we discussed this whole petition to bring it back and blah, blah, blah. Sorry. I did sign the petition. But,
I did too.
I watched season one. I did watch season one with my husband when it first came out, and he made me angry because we're like, I don't remember, but we're only in, like, episode one, and he just kind of looks over at me, and he goes, is that the bad guy? And I went, could you just shut up? And he's like, he's the bad guy, isn't he? And I was like, just keep watching!
It's always the dark and broody ones. Ben Barnes just has that look about him.
He does, and he recognized him. I forget what Ben Barnes was in that Jerry recognized him from, but he was
probably
like,
the Punisher.
Yeah, that's what it was. He's like, oh, it's so-and-so. And I was like, could you just... Well, he and I, in all honesty, I don't know about you and Brad, but when we're watching a show together, we will look at each other. And sometimes we even pause, depending on who has play of the remote at the time. And we're like, I don't know. They look familiar. I don't know where they're from. And one of us ends up getting the phone out and IMDBing this shit. Like, I'm not even... I don't know if you guys do that.
It's always me. Brad could care less.
Oh, we both are both invested so much. Like, yeah, we do this all the time.
No, I always have IMDb like pulled up. I'm like, who is this person? Where do I know them from?
Well, it's really bad when you recognize them. Or what's really bad is, I forget what we were watching the other day, but Jerry kept going, oh, we finally finished Picard. And he kept going, John Hamm over there. And I was like, that's not John Hamm. And he's like, yes, it is. He's like, you know, the guy from Baby Driver. I was like, that's not John Hamm either. That's Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He's like, well, they all look alike. I knew who I meant. And I was like, he's like, so if that's not John Hamm or Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is that? I was like, that's Tom Stashwick.
Wait, I don't know Tom Stashwick. Who's that?
Yeah, Todd Stashwick. When you see his face, you're going to go, ah. He's one of those guys that he's been like in literally a little bit of everything.
He's the guy I always think is, oh, what's the other guy's name? He's in the new Netflix show with Billy Piper about Prince Andrew. Scoop.
Yes.
Crap, what's his name? I see his face.
Okay, so Todd Stashwick was in The Last Thing He Told Me.
Oh, see, okay, that tracks. This is what, okay, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Yeah. I don't need an Indian show. Netflix series. Okay, maybe it's not called Scoop. I thought it was. What's the new Prince Andrew thing that I've been waiting to come out?
I don't know. Look up Billy Piper. That's how, when I can't figure something out. Scoop, yes.
Here
Scoop.
We go. Rufus Sewell. Rufus Sewell.
Oh, okay.
Todd Stashwick looks like Rufus Sewell to me.
We were having this whole discussion. Also, it led to a whole nother discussion about how, like, there's all these people that, like, look like other actor or actresses. And he was like, but it just cracked me up. He kept going, John Hamm. I was like, he's not John Hamm. But this is what we do when we watch TV. So, yes, that doesn't make me angry. But him looking at me, I'm during halfway through episode one going, he's that guy, isn't he? I was like, shh. But he's the same to me when we watch like a military. And he's like, that's not how that works. I'm like,
yeah, yeah. Oh, Brad does that with anything IT related.
Oh, we talked about this because you said you went and asked Brad about something. He's like, no, that's not how that even remotely works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so
if
give us an update. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, my other personal update. So everyone knows that I'm watching The Vampire Diaries through, or I'm trying to.
Makes me so happy.
I'm on season 5. Just to let everyone know what's going on. Let's see. The Elena and Caroline and Bonnie are all officially at college. Damon just got kidnapped to go be part of a vampire experiment. Mm-hmm. Stefan is trying to help Catherine work through being human again. And Catherine was like, no, I'm gonna go jump off a building. And Stefan was like, no, I caught you. You're going to stay alive whether you like it or not. So they're bonding over their bad attitudes, basically. And yeah, I think that's it for right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm approaching the middle of season 5.
Do we have anyone that we like better or that we now hate? Any changes on how we feel about any characters?
My favorites are still Bonnie and Catherine.
I love Bonnie.
I don't think those two are going to change. Everyone keeps asking me, like, Team Damon, Team Stefan, and everyone that I know is firmly Team Damon. And while I get it, mm-hmm. I understand the arguments. I still love Stefan. Like, I recognize his flaws. I get them.
Yes.
I'm still Team Stefan. I'm sorry.
If you book Vampire Diaries, I am 100% Stefan all the way in the books.
Okay.
In the show, there's a huge chunk where I'm like, no, stay with Stefan. But then there's a point where I'm like, oh, wait. No, Damon. Okay, go for it, Damon. Damon. And it's not, listen, if I were choosing, I'd probably personally choose Stefan. Although Damon's pretty hot. But but it's like her growth. Like, it makes more sense that she's with Damon. So.
I will say, Elena is one of my least favorite characters. All she really? Does is whine.
And see, I'm surprised you're like, I love Catherine.
I respect Catherine. I'll put it that way. Like, I don't necessarily like her, but I respect her.
I don't like her.
I do like her hair. She has great hair.
She always has fantastic hair. Nina Dobrev, in general, just has fantastic hair.
I mean, as, like, when she's playing Catherine, Catherine's hair is always spot
really
on.
Good. It's very, like, it's got volume, and, yeah, it's always gorgeous. But I'm just saying, in general, she has nice hair.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I believe you have a personal watching update here.
So my husband and I on Netflix, it's a really new show too. We have not binged it because you have got to pay attention to this show. So we're doing like an episode, not every single night, like back to back, but we're doing like an episode here, an episode there. It is also an adaptation, which we did not know going into the show. So I've never read this book, neither has he, but it's both in our wheelhouse of what we would read. But we're watching The Three Body Problem on Netflix.
Yeah.
You had not, Susan and James may be watching it. I can't remember.
Yes, they are.
Okay, I thought so. This thing is just crazy, but there's, a lot going on, and you really have to pay attention because something could be like the one episode, something flashes on the screen, on the computer screen really quick that you have to read, and it's gone. And if you didn't pay attention to that, you're like, wait, what? The cast is very interesting. That was one where we were like, he looks familiar. No, she looks familiar. It has Benedict Wong in it. Dr. Shane. Yeah. I know. I love him. It does some time jumping because it's telling you about something that happened in the 60s and then it comes back to modern day time. And then it goes to, they like not AI, what's virtual reality. There's kind of this virtual reality game, or so you think, that's taking place.
Yeah.
And so they're jumping into that, and when they go into that, they're in all different time periods.
And this is based on the book by this is Chinese. Sixian Liu. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's translated by Ken Liu for English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so can you tell me why it's called Three Body Problem without spoiling anything, or is that part of it?
That is actually part of it.
Okay.
Because in when they're figuring out, when they're all talking about what's going on, one of the lines, and this doesn't give anything away, she actually looks at the person she's explaining this stuff to, and she goes, "It's a three body problem." And you go, "Oh." So yeah, they actually explain the title of the book and the show in the narration. And so I'm sure that's actually, I feel like that's probably a direct line from the book as well, if they make it a point to tell you that. Okay. Episode's about an hour, 45 minutes, but it's not, I've noticed like some TV shows I can like play on my phone or answer you or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to pay attention.
Okay. Have you read the book?
I have not. I didn't even know it was a book. The reason we found out it was a book is as we were watching it, we had a show that we really liked that bummer. I think I've talked about this before. It ended up getting nixed because of the stupid writer strike.
Oh, okay.
It was Peripheral, done by Amazon, not Netflix, and it was also based off a book series. It also had some kind of like futuristic like game type stuff to it as well.
Yeah.
That was actually like real. And it was a fantastic, very well done show. Even though it's only one season, I still highly recommend The Peripheral, which was based on a book. But as we're watching Three Body Problem, we got like almost to the end of episode one. And Jerry goes, "It just really is reminding me." He's like, "It's got a lot of similarities to Peripheral, just in a different manner." And I was like, "Yeah, it really does." Like, you know, Peripheral was a book first. And it makes me wonder, like, was this also a book? And that's, here comes the Google foo. And sure enough, we were like, "Oh, okay, weird." Because like I said before, this is something that we would both read. We'd both be interested in reading. So I didn't know, though. Trying to think if there's so far. There's a lot of death, I'll say that. So, and then there's mentions of suicide, or you think it's suicide.
Yeah.
So just know that, like, going into it. It's very science fiction. So, yeah.
I'm down for sci-fi.
I know, I love a good sci-fi. I'm enjoying this, but like I said, it's maybe there's somebody out there that's like, "I binged it," and that's awesome. But I need thought between each one. But it's good. I really like it.
Our focus of this episode today, mm-hmm. our book that we're going to discuss, is also an adaptation.
It is.
Which I did not know until I started like looking into it. And I was like, okay. Oh, and it's actually got some big names in it.
It does. I was actually going to ask you, because I was thinking about it before we were recording. I have watched it prior to
reading. Oh, you have?
Okay. Mm-hmm. I had watched it before. Oddly, I enjoyed it. And everybody's going to be like, "Why oddly?" We'll get there in a minute. I remember actually watching this. I think this is one of those things like, during COVID, you know, we didn't have a whole lot to do. So I was like literally just watching. I was like, "Oh, this looks good. Okay, what about this?" So I have watched it and I do remember enjoying it. And the adaptation wasn't until like 2009. But the book has actually only been out since 2006. It's not as old as what you would think it would be.
Yeah. Today we are discussing The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we chose this is because April is the national month for what's it called now?
Parkinson's.
All right, thank you. Y'all, my brain. And we were like, well, let's try to do something with that. And then we, of course, like probably the first person I think everyone in our general age range thinks of with Parkinson's is Michael J. Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up Michael J. Fox's like favorite stuff. And he said that The Road is his like favorite book of all time. And he gave the like this lengthy, I'm trying to find it real quick. I should have pulled it up before.
Which he has a book himself. So at first when you were like, let's do a book for Michael J. Fox. And I was like, okay. And then you were like, his favorite book. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I heard that all through the phone. Because we were texting about it.
Yeah, I was like, oh. Because my brain immediately went, you said Michael J. Fox. And I was like, oh, okay. I was thinking, I thought, my brain immediately went, oh, his book. And you went, his favorite book. And I was like, oh. But I don't dislike the idea. I think it's really, really a cool idea that, like, you're still honoring that person. Maybe they are an author, but you're not reading their work. You're reading a work they highly recommend. So.
Yeah. And we hadn't covered, like, any post-apocalyptic books yet.
No.
So I was like, this will be something fun to do. Well, now I can't find that article anymore. But yeah, he went on like this really long thing about how much he loved The Road and Cormac McCarthy's writing style and just all the things. And I was like, okay, we'll give this a try. And I'll speak for probably both of us at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We have not discussed this at length because we wanted it to be authentic for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This book was not our cup of tea.
Mm-mm. So to give you a quick The Road, it is a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. It was published in 2006. The story chronicles a father and son traveling the broken roadways of a post-apocalyptic world. The utter destruction of the natural environment and subsequent lawlessness, grotesque behavior of the survivors is described through the intimate perspective of an unshakable bond between a father and a son. This novel, of course, was met with critical acclaim for its dark style and vivid poetic language, and The Road was even, as we said, adapted into a film in the same name in 2009.
So, now you have the synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the synopsis is good.
It is.
Like, I took notes like I normally do when I read something for the podcast. Normally, my notes are like a good 10 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this book was a little on the shorter side, I still only have 3 pages of notes. My biggest gripe is that it's just one long book. There are literally no chapters.
Yes.
There's just long, continuous, it's just narration. Like, we don't get, like, he said, she said, they, like, it's just a bunch of blech.
Yeah, like,
And you can, like, there were points in the book where I think I was supposed to be, like, feeling tense or, like, anticipating something to happen.
I didn't.
It everything fell flat. It was just this long, stagnant line.
Yes.
So, our main characters are literally called Man and Boy. We don't know their names. Mm-hmm. That was also another gripe. I, like, names help me form a person.
Yes.
Like, it's part of their identity. Yes. Why was I not given their identities?
Because we've talked about this before, and I ask you the question once, that do you, like, as you're reading a book, you'll get the character's name and, like, the setting and, like, the, you start developing, like, see how they interact with other characters, and it does not matter sometimes how the author describes a person. You have this picture of that character in your brain. and that's how you move through the story. And I felt like I could not do that with this.
No.
Like, there was no real, like, defining anything. And I feel like in a post-apocalyptic world, what is most important is the description of, like, the people and the places and the emotions. And I was lacking that.
So. There's just the only thing that we get consistently is that the world is gray and colorless. Right. It was basically just a bunch of nothing. And we don't even get to know what happened. We're robbed of that. We don't know what exactly brought on whatever it was that happened.
I didn't mind that so much because I was thinking they were leaving that open to, you know, a lot of these post-apocalyptic books, because I do enjoy them. Actually, one of my favorite book series by Kresley Cole is all set in like a post-apocalyptic world. But they tell you, she goes into detail about what caused it and how it happened. And because if I remember correctly, when you first read the book, it's not it becomes that way. But I think I kind of liked it because if you've ever noticed, some people say it was like this virus, or it was like this famine, or it was this thing, and it leaves it open to interpretation of what you think will cause the apocalypse. So that's the only thing that I didn't have a problem with.
Well, like, the only thing we get is that we know everything is covered in like a layer of basically ash. Like, they never come out and say that it's ash.
That's what I assumed it was, honestly.
Yeah. But whatever it is has caused all the plants to die. Nothing can grow. Most of the water is contaminated. And the only thing that we're given is that the man and the boy are traveling south to escape the harsh winter. And that's basically all we have to go on. And yeah, the whole book is them just walking.
Yeah.
It's just one long hike. We do find out, like, throughout the book, I'll briefly go over some of the notes. Like I said, I only have 3 pages of notes. One of the first things that happens is they find an old supermarket, and the boy has his first and last Coca-Cola.
That break my, that, I was like,
yeah, I was like,
as I was drinking my Coke, I was like, oh, this makes me sad.
The first few years, I'll put in quotes after, because there's just a before and an after. Mm-hmm. So the first few years after whatever it was happened, people are seeing wearing masks and they're all wheeling around like supermarket carts with whatever they can fit in the cart, like their belongings that they're traveling with. And it's called the road because everyone travels basically on the road. And I imagine it kind of like either a highway or an interstate. It's not really described that well.
No, and if I remember in the movie, it wasn't a heavy populated road like that.
Oh, it wasn't?
I don't remember it being.
Oh, okay. And the movie does star Viggo Mortensen, so that does intrigue me. And if you say you like the movie better than the book, I might give the movie a try.
I remember watching it, and I remember liking it, but I could have been on something. Listen, it was COVID. I just was sad a lot, and
my favorite COVID story to tell people, because you know, we were basically, you could either, or at least out here, they never really closed the parks out here, like we could all still go to the parks or in your backyard. Yeah. Or stay in your house. Like, those were basically your 3 options. So I was playing on my phone a lot. And my favorite game to play on my phone was a lawnmower simulator.
I was playing Goat Simulator.
I would just put, my little man would hop on his lawnmower and I'd go cut grass.
I played Animal Crossing.
I just cut a lot of virtual grass.
So yes, I do remember watching this during that very strange time when I was stuck in America.
Oh man,
the stupid panini. But again, I had, if you remember, I had two surgeries during that time too. So I literally could have been on something.
That's true.
Like, I watched Knives Out with my brother and I was like, did that really just happen? And he's like, what? And he's like, I'd say something. He goes, your medicine's talking. Shh, go to sleep. Yeah. So, I mean, again, people are like, what were you on, Miranda? I don't know. But I don't remember if I watched it during the time during the pandemic when I was literally on a medication or if I just know I when I got done with it, I was like, okay, I don't think that was a waste of my time. But I'm going to look up what it was on Rotten Tomatoes while you go into the story some more.
Well, I see it right here. Rotten Tomatoes is 74%. So it got a pretty, it's a decent rating, 74%.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is a Pulitzer Prize winning book, and we're like, eh. So can we really trust that 74%?
Well, and I will say, I watched the trailer for it on YouTube, and it seemed like the movie was going to be more about the man defending the boy from other people, which I think I remember that happening.
Like, I remember that being,
that was
like,
just a... That was just a big portion of the movie trailer. And that was a very, very small sliver of this book.
Yeah.
So it just made me wonder if the movie kind of made that more of the plot for Hollywood purposes than a true adaptation of the book. Because if it was more of an adaptation of the book, that would have been like a little 10-second clip of, hey, don't take my kid. Okay, cool. We're not going to shoot each other. Bye.
I don't know. I struggled. I'm not even going to lie. And I was like really excited about this book too. I was like, oh, okay. Like this should be good.
Well, have you read any of Cormac McCarthy's other books?
I have not.
I haven't.
Well, wait, hang on. We talked about this and I was like, there was something of his that I was like, maybe I have.
No Country for Old Men.
I've never actually read that.
Okay, I haven't either.
But I did like the movie.
What else? Those are his two big ones that I know of. What else has he written?
All the Pretty Horses.
I haven't read any of these.
I have read that. Yes, I have read All the Pretty Horses a long time ago. And I remember thinking, okay. But I didn't continue. It was a series and I didn't continue.
Well, I can say that after reading The Road, I will most likely be not picking up another Cormac McCarthy book.
I'm sorry, Fox.
Like, if there are any Cormac McCarthy fans listening to this, please message me on Instagram or Miranda on TikTok. Let us know why we should. Where's the missing link?
Okay, here's what I will devil's advocate on this, right? Last month, we read a book that I absolutely love, right? Read it three times. Every time I love it. It has a few problems. I didn't disagree with you on that, but you didn't like it. And that's okay. So I'm wondering if this is just another one of those, like, we just weren't the people for this book. Or, like, maybe when he read it, he had, like I told you, when the first time I read the book we read last month, I just had such a emotional, like, connection to it that I was like, ah. So I'm wondering if maybe when he read it, there was something in it that at that time in his life when he read it, that it just such emotional connection for him that maybe we're not getting it.
Maybe. I mean, it is very possible. I'm not saying that's not possible. I just have a hard time doing that because there's literally no emotions in this book either. Like,
to me,
the man had one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to get south.
Mm-hmm.
The boy didn't even really have his own purpose. He just did what the man told him to.
Which I didn't like.
Like, I the man was trying to teach the boy like how to survive because he knew he was dying or that he wouldn't live much longer. So he was trying to give the boy the skills that he needed to survive, like on his own out in the wild, not have to rely on anybody or anything. And it was just one long Boy Scout lesson.
I feel really bad. I'm looking on it on Goodreads now, and I'm seeing some of my friends have reviewed it. And reading their reviews, I'm like, do I just not understand something?
Well, and the part that aggravated me the most, like, I understand why they wanted to get south. They wanted to not have the threat of frostbite and cold and all that. Like, I understand. But when they came across that bunker, they came across a bunker that was fully stocked. They could have literally lived there their entire rest of their lives. And it was hidden. Like, you had to be looking for it to find it. Why didn't they just stay there?
I agree.
The man was like, no, we have to move on in 3 days' time. I'm like, why?
What? I don't know. That's what I couldn't understand. I was like, explain to me why. Like, what I need. And maybe it's the type of reader I am. And you and I tend to be the same type of reader. I needed an explanation. I hate this whole, like, I don't know if you grew up this way. But one of the things that I, to this day, refuse to look. I've a few times almost said it to Caden. And I'm like, no. What I hated as a kid is when you would ask someone a genuine, like, why do I need to do, or they ask you to do something, you're like, why? You're not being a smart ass. Like, you're genuinely, as a kid, like, needing to learn, why do you need me to do that? And when someone would go, because I said so.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I felt like someone was looking at me and going, because I said so. And I'm like, no, but why?
So there's no explanation for anything that these characters do. Mm-hmm. Like, none at all. So if you want to read a book set in a post-apocalyptic world that gives you a lot of questions, this might be the book for you.
I would also give it the caveat of saying it kind of, I will say it's more post-apocalyptic Western.
Yes, it had Western elements to it.
Listen, does it have some poetic wording? Absolutely. Is there someone that probably really enjoys the way it was laid out? Because I've heard people, like, a lot of the reviews I read were like, the prose is amazing, it's fantastic. I didn't have that. Maybe it is for you, though. Like, one of my friends literally said, how can prose so simple be so haunting and yet beautiful? No fluff, no over-describing. So he loved it for those reasons. And you and I are like, no, I need some description.
Well, I'm not even needing description per se, because you know sometimes I skip over.
Oh, you skip description, and I'm like, give it description.
But I need answers for things. Yes, like, maybe that's why are we going south?
Explanation, not description. Yeah. Those are, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel really bad. I think this is the first time this has happened where we've both been like,
both Miranda and I asked each other, do you want to pick another book? And we were like, no, we've never done a post-apocalyptic book before.
No.
We've never covered Cormac McCarthy before. Uh-huh. So this was, and we've also, like, this is new for us, so it's also new for our audience. Uh-huh. We've never both disliked a book like this before.
No, we haven't.
But we think that that's important to know that if there is someone in our audience listening, maybe you can teach us something as well.
Right.
Like, what are we missing? Please fill us in, because this is Michael J. Fox's favorite book. I want to know why. What am I missing?
Maybe I need to go back and reread his, the article, like, where he talks heavily about it, and see if maybe I can, now that I have read the book, maybe understand what he was talking about. I don't know.
I'm going to try to find it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just still scrolling and I'm baffled. It has a 3.99 on Goodreads. 59,449 reviews with 904,824 ratings. Because just because you rate it doesn't mean you left a review.
Yeah.
29,001 stars, but it has 347,841 five stars. So 38% of the people that have rated it five stars.
Okay, here's what Michael J. Fox had to say.
Okay.
It's kind of surprising for someone who's a self-described optimist to love this apocalyptic road story so much. But McCarthy captures the step in front of a train, protect at all cost mindset of a father, and transfers it to the starkest possible context. And fun fact, this is also recommended by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. It even now has a book. Have you ever seen the workbooks that they do for like, because I had one for Caden for homeschool,
like Week
and Lord of the Flies. Well, no, it's like teachers can use them in the classroom, or like I used it for homeschool. They have them for Lord of the Flies and Frank. It's like a workbook you can actually get. And I found out just now they apparently have one for the road for them to do it, and they recommend it for 9th through 12th grade. So.
So we're missing something.
Listen, could I have not been in the mindset to read this? Because I have read stuff before and been like, and then gone back to it later and been like, I don't know that that. I don't know if that's
I just don't think we are the intended audience for this book.
Exactly. I had a huge conversation with somebody this week, not about books, but in regards to in general, like me telling that person, like, I understand you don't like it and you don't have to like it, but I don't think it was made for you. Like, you were not the intended audience. And I think that maybe that's just what happened here. And I think it opens up a really good conversation of, which we've briefly had before, that not everyone in the reader world is going to like the same things. And if this was a book that you adore, just because we liked it doesn't mean that we don't like you. I think not every book is for everyone. And sometimes you have to remember that. Like there's people a prime example, because most of our audience is very similar to us, a prime example is a lot of people really like Forked Wing or really like ACOTAR, and other people are like, please get out of here with that. I don't want it. And it doesn't make anyone's reading journey any less. And I'm glad I read this. I will say that. I am glad I did it. I'm glad that I took myself out of my box, so to speak, because even though I will technically read pretty much any genre, I think I do pigeonhole myself and put myself in this box because I find comfort in certain places. I just didn't get, I think, what everybody else got from this. Like my friends that have 5-star reviews on it, I didn't get it. I gave it 2 stars. There were some things I liked, but I think it could have been better. And honestly, my main gripe is the same main gripe you had. I need some breakup. I need some defined, like, even if you didn't like number the chapters, if you just like cut the page, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I did not like that.
I gave it 3 stars, and I think I think that's accurate.
And why do you feel 3 was accurate for you?
When something happened, it was exciting.
Okay.
It was just so few and far between. Like when I, like normally, like I'm visualizing a line, normally you have plot points that peak it.
Yes.
And then you have like something sad happen and it goes down, and it's kind of like your heartbeat, like a heartbeat line on a monitor. Uh-huh. This book was just basically all flatlined.
Yeah.
There were a few little spikes. And I did enjoy learning some survival skills, like some stuff I would never have thought to do. And it also made me wonder, why does this guy know this? That's another question I never got an answer to. Like, how did he learn all this stuff?
Maybe that's not what they wanted you to focus on, but unfortunately my brain couldn't not.
Yeah.
To remind everyone, my two stars means it wasn't for me or something that could keep my attention. That's essentially what 2 stars. That's why I went with 2. It just, because at the end of the day, it just wasn't the book for me. I did find myself struggling to read this. Like, I won't lie.
Understandable.
Yeah, I just wanted more. I guess that's really the only thing I can sum it up to say is I just wanted more.
Yeah.
And I know you took notes. So do you have anything to add? Because I kind of, I feel bad. I kind of just went on a...
No, because I also don't want to ruin the ending for anybody.
Yeah.
So if you do want to read this, I won't go into the ending or anything. Mm-hmm. I was satisfied with the ending.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't bad. I think it ended as best as it could.
I think it ended well for the story that it was.
Yeah. But yeah, Miranda and I, we both just wanted more from the story. We have unanswered questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like unanswered questions. I am a detective. Yeah. I need my answers.
I need answers. I will say, I told Bianca, I didn't tell her what I thought before we started recording. And she's like, hey, about this book. I was like, yes, so. But I did also tell you, I didn't do my star rating. I just did it. So I just closed it out that I finished it on Goodreads because I, not that we would sway the other one the other way, but I didn't want you to see mine and be like, oh no. I guess give it a try. I will say his No Country for Old Men adapted very well. So maybe he makes great adaptation. Like his adaptations work very well.
Yeah.
So it says if you enjoyed this book, you also enjoyed Slaughterhouse-Five or Fight Club or Clockwork Orange. I enjoyed all three of those books. So something's wrong with me.
Well, see, none of those books have anything to do with each other. Those are all just kind of, quote, classics.
That's true. And they're saying people that enjoyed those enjoyed this. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. But going to our next and final segment, recent reads and acquisitions. Miranda, you go first.
Oh, me go first? Oh, you
put me on the spot. Or do you want me to go first? I can go first if you want me to.
I need to click back real quick. Okay. So recent acquisitions, I honestly haven't purchased much. I used credits I already had on Audible to get two of the books that I finished because they were both Audible-only originals. So, like, that's – for whatever reason, this author that writes, her books only get done on Audible. They're not in Kindle. They're not nothing. And I find that interesting. So I found an author named Bryn Kelly, and she wrote A Murder to Remember, which – my, like, Jane Austen girlies, and like, if you also like murder mysteries, I think would really like this book. It's very cute. I finished it in, like, no time. Again, it doesn't have pages to it because it's literally only on Audible. Like, it's the only option available. But the main character, Jane Austen, she's a huge Jane Austen fan. And she kind of snuck away from a dull tour she was doing of an English country manor. And she runs into a very dashing man that she says is even more dashing than Darcy himself. He's about to lose his ancestral home to family debts, which is the home she was actually on the tour of. And he kind of invites her. He's like, listen, I know the tour sucks. I'm sorry. Do you want to, like, hang out, you know? He's kind of, because of his troubles, he's drinking. So he's like, she's like, do you want to join me? And like, sure. And they end up in the estate's priceless wine collection. And they wake up the next morning in his bed and they're convinced that they witnessed a murder. But everybody convinces them, no, this wine that you drank, it's so old. It's like very rare. Like, we're surprised if you'd known what you were drinking. It's a hallucinogenic, and but it's funny. So it is a romance. It is a mystery. There is some action that happens, but it's also funny. So I highly recommend it. And then when I finished that book of hers, I saw she had another.
Oh, wait, is this supposed to be like a take on A Walk to Remember?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay.
It's
You said it was a romance. I was like, wait.
No, no one's dying. It's more of,
I mean, someone died.
Well, or did they? because I said they're convinced they saw a murder.
That is true.
No, this is, she's American. She's burnt out. She went through a really bad experience. That's part of the plot line that doesn't get told to you in the very beginning, so I won't spoil that. But she, like, ended up going through a bad experience, and she ends up in part of a breakup, and that's why she's in England, because she's American. And like I said, she's huge Jane Austen fan, so she's doing all these tours that, like, where these different television shows were shot. Like, they reference real television shows, because apparently he's like, oh, and this part of the manor upstairs downstairs was filmed, and in this was filmed, and but it's like falling apart, so it's not exactly what she thought she was getting herself into. But no, it's not a walk to remember, but it is a murder to remember.
Okay.
It was really cute. But when I finished that, Audible was like, you might also like this. It was the same author. And she had another book, again, only available format I could find was audiobook by Audible. And this one's called You Only Die Twice. And this is a high school teacher named Alice. She helps her dying Russian neighbor write a spy thriller. And she thinks she's doing a really good deed and helping her friend because they become really good friends. And then enters this, like, mysterious man that shows up in her classroom claiming, you didn't actually write a fiction novel. I am your hero of the book. And she's like, sure you are. And he's like, no, no. We have a problem here. I'm real. And she's like, right, right. Like, she's thinking it's like this. And her book's not very big either. Like, I think she's like, I don't remember the number, but she's like, I only sold 37 copies and 27 of those are my mother's book club or something like that.
It reminds me of the movie Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell.
Yes, but it's a whole conspiracy theory that ends up happening. You got a lot of the alphabet people, CIA, FBI. They end up dodging bullets. This is a romance. It's got some spice, but not, like, I think, like, you'd be fine with it. But it's, I really liked this. So, Bryn Kelly, I don't know what she does, but she'd be doing something good.
Okay. Bryn Kelly.
Yeah. So, both on Audible. And then I read the trigger warning smorgasbord that is Butcher and Blackbeard. Or Blackbird, excuse me. Butcher and Blackbird. And the tagline is, every serial killer needs a friend. Every game must have a winner.
That's also a Bryn.
Bryn. Yeah, it is. I didn't realize that. It's a spelled different, but this is Bryn Weaver. Quick read. It's only like 360 pages. It is a dark romance. Not gonna lie. She tells you right off the bat on page one, the amount of triggers. I think they're even on her website. Hang on. I will pull that up. So it is, a romance, and it is spicy. There were parts I was like, oh, what, excuse me, what did he just say to her? What did they just do? Excuse me? But the trigger warnings be crazy, and it's not just for the spice level. It is, here we go. So it says Butcher and Blackbird. This is a book with the craziest list. So please hold tight. And it says cracks, knuckles. Yes, this really is the list. And yes, this does all happen. Eyeballs and eye sockets, amateur surgery, skin ornaments, chainsaws, axes, knives, scalpels, and a lot of sharp objects. Accidental cannibalism, not so accidental cannibalism, questionable use of mummified corpse, lobotomized manservant, ill-advised use of kitchen implements, I'm sorry about the cookies and ice cream, but really I'm not, detailed sex scenes, which include but are not limited to a lot of things that I won't say because we might get people not listening to us anymore. There are references to parental neglect and child abuse, parental loss, not depicted. It says one parent murdered, one parent passes in childbirth. references to child sexual assault, also not in detail. Like, it never tells you that it actually happened. It just alludes that it happened. I will say that. And it's a book about serial killers. So there's some generally messed up murder and chaos. And that is from her website.
Are you going to read any of her other books after reading that
one? I absolutely am.
Okay.
Again, something is wrong with me. I will say, even with the, okay, overall, even with all those content warnings, there were only two parts in this book where I was like, excuse me, what? That I genuinely felt a little like, and the one part is in the literal very, very beginning. And it literally has nothing to do with any of the rest of the story, but it's a slight description of maggots, and I don't do maggots.
Disgusting.
And this literally lasts like two sentences, and then it's done. Like, it's done. And I, nope. And everybody was like, really? Out of all that list, that's what bothered you? And then the line where she says, I'm sorry about the cookies and ice cream. Yeah, if you read it, I'm sorry about the cookies and ice cream. I also, at that one.
Okay.
I can think about ice cream for a week.
What did you rate it as? Do you remember?
I think I gave it 4 stars. I did. I gave it 4 stars. Okay. Because, again, I did a few times. And there were some parts in the spicy parts that just weren't for me. I was like, whoa, this is a little, like, I don't like this. So, this is not for Bianca.
I mean, I could have told you that.
No, I definitely could have told you that, but I'm just saying, if for some reason I did pique your interest, I'm telling you no. Just, I'm telling you now. Have you seen that TikTok where I think it's actually Kris Kardashian? She's like, I've seen all I've needed to see. No, that's my response to you. No. I do like is when they meet and they form their friendship, because they kind of start forming a friendship or competition at first. They're both serial killers. And they like low key know about the other one because they're like, they kind of like, they're known serial killers. Like, no one knows them. They haven't been caught, but like, they have names. Does that make sense? Like, they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he knows, he's like, wait, kinda you're
like
the
Scranton Strangler.
Yeah. He's like, wait, you're the this? And she's like, you're the this? And they're low-key trying to pretend they don't really, I've never heard of you, blah, blah, blah. But they end up developing this relationship where they start playing this game with each other. Now, I will say, they only kill, like, they're like vigilantes. They only take out people that are, like, doing horrible, just horrible things.
Like scum of the earth people.
Scum of the earth people, yes. And they're getting away with it because they usually have money or connections or whatever. So they're taking out people like that. And they start this annual game to see, they're like, here's the next, or they have to figure out, they're like, there's something going on in this area. We're pretty sure it's a serial killer or children have gone missing in this area, blah, blah, blah. And they once a year meet up to try to figure out who can find who the bad guy is first and who can actually take him out. And it turns into more than that. I did find that intriguing. I thought that was kind of cool. She has another book either coming out because it's called the Ruinous Love Trilogy. So
the next one that on her website, it was green. It said leather and lace or something like that.
Leather and Lark. Uh-huh. Yeah, it comes out in June. So it's a different couple, but they have a connection to the first couple that we met in book one. And then book three is coming out in January of 2025. Or actually, part of it says publication date to be determined, but it's expected to come out January of 25. And this one is called Scythe and Sparrow. And it's very, synopsis is super blurb. Like, it's very small. It leads me to believe this couple is somehow also going to be connected to the first and the second. I don't know how yet. It has dual POVs, which sometimes I don't like. I did like this. And it does have a Happily Ever After. So, 4 stars. If you can handle the dark romance, then this is for you. But don't say I didn't warn you. And then the other book I have, which when I asked you guys in our group chat the other day, had anybody read this? I didn't realize, like, this book literally just came out this month. Draw Down the Moon by PC Cast and Kristen Cast. They're a mother-daughter duo that write books. They've written a ton of stuff. I think they did the Marked series. They've done...
Yeah, I've read part of the Marked series.
Yeah, I've read several of their other works. So I didn't realize when I was asking you guys the other day that it came out on April 2nd of this year. It's super cool. It's straight Miranda. It is fantasy. I don't know. Somebody put it in young adult, but everybody in this, like, she literally turns 18 in chapter one, and then the other person is already 18. Like her best friend, one of the other main characters. So I don't know. Would you classify it young adult if they're like 18, 19, 20?
If they're 18 or 19, I could see it being.
Yeah.
I think it would depend on the plot line and how it's written.
Yeah.
So if it's more on the chase side, I would put it in young adult.
I mean, there's like some talking about kissing and holding hands, but there's no like, I think she says like the word sex is used, but it never actually takes place.
Yeah.
It really is mainly more about this world and what is going on in this world. It is number one. I don't know how many there are going to be. Because it just came out, but it says it definitely ended on a cliffhanger, and they definitely tell you it's number one. This is the one where I texted you guys, and I was like, I had two problems, because one, the communication. I was like, Here we go, miscommunication, and then I got super frustrated, because I did listen to this one on Audible, and the narrator said faux. And I sat down to enjoy my faux. No. You can ask Bianca. I was so... Bianca was probably reading all that going, Miranda, just go to bed. I was so frustrated about this. And what I think ticked me off the most is one of our main characters is Asian.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would irritate me.
So the person eating the pho at the time was not one of them, but I was like, ah! Anyway, so it is a world that it kind of had some Harry Potter to it, in my opinion, in a good way. Rin is our main character, and she isn't supposed to have any powers. She was born of magical parents, but not under the moon sign. So everyone that has powers in this book, it's based on the moon sign you were born under. So, like... Yeah, you're a Pisces, but you were born under a like Leo moon. Your powers would be based on that Leo moon sign. So she was not born under a moon sign, so she's destined for life as a mundane. And then on her 18th birthday, which it's in the synopsis, I'm not giving anything away, she starts glowing and doing things that a magical person would do. This is when her life is turned upside down, and she had a plan for herself. She was going to graduate school. She was going to go to community college for business, and she was going to run her uncle's. Her uncles have a bookstore, and that was her plan. She was going to stay and run like the bookstore. But now that she has become a magical, she can't go to community college. She has to leave home and go to the Academy de la Luna. It's a secret magical school on a hidden island off the Seattle coast. Lee Young, who's her best friend, has always known his future. He was born under a moon sign. He knew, like, she knew about music, magic. She knew he was going to this school. Most mundanes don't, or if they do, they pretend they don't. And he's always had one goal, pass the trials, impress the moon council, and uphold his family's reputation. Like, he comes from a well-known family. They've got money. They're big to do in the magical community and non. he wasn't expecting that he would be going with his best friend, who secretly he's been in love with, like, for as long as he can remember. They're thrown into this grueling trials. So it also had me kind of thinking, like, Fourth Wing. There are these trials they have to go through. The difference is they're not necessarily competing, like, they're not competing to the death. And sometimes they work together in them. But there's trials they have to complete. There's three different ones that are done throughout the school year to see, like, where you place. And if you don't do well, it's not a big deal. It just means that you won't work for the Moon Council, or you won't, like, have a full career with your magic. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but there's lots of secrets. There's prophecy. There is murder. And they'll have to decide. Lee ends up having to decide who to protect. It's either his family's legacy or the girl he loves. And they live it on a huge cliffhanger. I really enjoyed this book. I gave it 4 stars. I was really
bummed. It seems like everyone else has enjoyed the book too. It has almost a 4-star rating.
Yeah, it's got a 3.47, 281 reviews, 382 ratings, which at first I was like, that's low, but it literally came out like less than 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I will continue this series. What I'm bummed about is there's not even a projected name for book 2. So I'm like, oh, what have I done to myself?
You gotta check it to make sure you're not getting in a series that just came out.
I know, but Audible was like, we think you'd like this. And I hit the sample and I was like, ooh. And then I read it and I don't know. This is very much a Miranda book. When they say you have magic and it's based on like your astrological like moon sign, I was like, sign me up. I want to go to Academia de Luna. What? And then I was like, ooh, maybe I don't. But, and it's like everybody that has gone is going here. They have been planning for this their whole lives. Like they've always known they were going to go, like, and they are divided. It's not into houses, but at the same time, yeah, like dormitories, like if you are a Leo moon or if you are an Aquarius moon, you live with the other Aquarius moons. You live with the other Leo moons. So got some Harry Potter vibes, got some Fourth Wing vibes. Yeah, but it's friends to lovers. There is some miscommunication. Like I said, it made me angry. So it's got some like Hallmark tendencies in that manner. But I really love how they explain the like kind of power system. And there's elementals. Yeah, it's really good. I really liked it. Again, pay attention. Pay attention when a book comes out before you start it. that is all I have really read. As far as acquired, like I said, I haven't really purchased much. However, I want to give a quick shout out because I had a package actually make it from America.
What?
I know. This one came from an individual, and I still had to fight the amount of paperwork I had to put in and be like, this is a gift! But because it came from an individual, I finally got it all figured out. And it cost the person $27 to send this package. And then I had to pay another $10 to accept it.
Good grief.
I know, it's just ridiculous. But she gave me a copy of her brother, who I'm also friends with, but I got a copy of Justin Woodward. He's actually from Dothan. He was at the same book signing we went to for Colleen. He brought his wife.
Okay.
He actually stood up and asked a question to her. He was like, as in a fellow author, I don't know if you remember that or not, but.
I do not. But.
Okay. I've known him personally. His sister, Jessica, is one of my very good friends. She's married to the guy that owned the Enterprise Fanatics. Who is one of Jerry's very good friends.
Yeah.
But Justin has a new book out that's like a Western. I guess he was asked to write this as part of like a bunch of different authors are writing like their own book. And then it's not being compiled as an anthology, but it's like each person will have their own book. but it's like part of a kind of sort of series where none of the books, they're same topic or kind of, you know, same style, but not really the same. I don't know what I'm trying to say. My brain just went dead. You know, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Like an anthology?
Well, they're not combining it into one book like an anthology, but think anthology, but if each story were an individual actual book.
Okay. Like a short story type thing?
Yeah, yeah. So,
or novella?
So, yeah. Because it's not, it's like 190 pages.
Yeah, that could be a novella.
Yeah. But she sent me his new book. It is a horror western. And I'm very excited to read it, but I wanted to give a shout out to Justin. You can buy his cookbook on Kindle for like $3.50. It has, of all the ratings he has already, it has a 3.81. So that's really good, which I've enjoyed all his works I read. But it's, there's been talk of monsters around a small quiet town of Fort Whipple.
What's the title? You never gave me the title.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here Comes the Sun.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. I thought I said it. But it's there's been kind of talk about these monsters around this really small, quiet town called Fort Whipple. They had like a brutal massacre. First, it was livestock, dead, shriveled bodies lined the fields, drained of their blood. But then human bodies began falling from the sky. And a dark protector of sorts is dispatched to minimize the casualties. It's got some Western vibes to it for sure. It definitely is kind of horror. But I'm really looking forward to this one. Because like I said, I have enjoyed any book that Justin has written before. And he's just really a really nice guy in general. And then Justin and Jessica recently lost their father. And so he dedicates the book on the very first page to his father. So, yeah. And they unfortunately had lost their mother only a couple of years before that. So he also writes a really nice note to all of his fans of his book saying, you know, thank you for giving him grace. Because this is the first book he's written since losing either of them. So, huge shout out. If you like any sort of horror or you just want to read something different or support an indie author, go check out Here Comes the Sun by Justin Woodward on Amazon. You can get it on your Kindle for $3.50. Yeah. So I acquired that one, but it was gifted to me. But yeah. It's still an acquisition. So, now that I've told you a bunch of stuff about a lot of books, and I said more than I did about the road, what have you been reading and acquiring?
I'm sorry, that was hilarious.
It'd be true. Well, listen, my mom and I were talking about, I won't tell the world what mom and I were talking about earlier, but I told her, I was like, listen, facts be facts. Like,
I am currently reading To Kill a Shadow by Catherine Quinn. I'm probably about a third of the way done.
Mm-hmm.
I started it last night and I basically, like, I've just been reading and setting it down to like do a chore and then go do something and then I'll come back and read.
So you're really interested?
Yes. It does have chapters. And the chapters are like 6, 7, maybe 10 pages max. So it's a good book to read a little bit and then put down and read a little bit and then put down. And I got this from the library.
I like the cover.
The cover is gorgeous. And these pages, the edges are sprayed like a super dark purple. It's gorgeous.
Okay. This tagline just sold me. It says Britannia meets the mist with a touch of Evil Dead.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I am stepping out of my comfort zone just a tad. This is tagged as like romantasy horror. I'm not a huge horror reader. And
you
where
say
I'm at.
That, but you have a deep love for Grady Hendrix and he is horror.
Well, see, I think that's more thriller than horror. Personally, I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that it's thriller, but he is definitely horror.
Okay. But where I'm at in the book, I'm just now, like, it says it's Britannia meets the mist. There's literally like this mist, kind of like in Shadow and Bone, where you have the shadow thing part.
Clear definition of.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're literally about to enter this mist thing. So I think I'm starting to get to the horror aspect, because so far it's just kind of like we're training for battle type stuff. But yeah, this girl, she's trained by her uncle to be like the best fighter like ever, basically. Mm-hmm. And this commander who's like recruiting for the king's army, he sees her fight someone in their town and he's like, I'm taking you. So he takes all of these random boys and the girl, and she's like the first girl to ever be chosen to go fight in the king's army. The commander takes them and they basically train. They do a bunch of things. And now we're about to enter the mist. And we're going to see what's in the mist. And because the whole thing is like the sun disappeared. So they're trying to get the sun back. And there's like a whole mythology attached to why the sun disappeared and stuff. Like they have their own god system.
See, they explained it.
Explains what?
I'm just saying, somebody explained something.
Anyways, I'm really enjoying it so far. I recommend it. I'm on page 161 out of 400 and something.
Okay.
430-ish. Yeah, I'm about a third of the way done.
So it's not a tome, but it's a chunker.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, it could be a little shorter because it's a smaller book. Like, it's not a normal size hardcover book. Like, it's short. Mm-hmm. And the print is actually, like, it's not, I won't say large, but it's bigger than normal. Or maybe I'm just been reading really tiny print books recently.
My eyeballs would like larger words for sure. Like, I'm all about, like, I accidentally checked out a large print book about a year ago, and I was like, I'm not mad at this.
But that's my current read.
Okay.
Yesterday, I finished a book called Threads That Bind by Kika Hatsopoulou. It was interesting. It's going to be a series. It definitely left you on a cliffhanger. I didn't completely understand the magic system.
Okay.
Like, I found myself having to, like, sit and think about why this person had these abilities and why these other people didn't have these certain abilities and why this person only had this ability. Like, it was very convoluted. But the storyline was good. It had a couple of twists and turns. This is the one that I was saying, she's like a private detective and she can see people's threads and cut threads.
Is that the one that also something with the mob?
Yes. This one.
When you were describing it in chat, I was like, ooh.
Yes. Well, I was excited because I never see my name in anything. And there is a character in this book named Bianca Rossi. And I was like, ooh, I'm in a book. And then we learn more about Bianca Rossi. And she's like a mob boss. And I'm like, ooh, she's a mob boss. but they keep saying mob boss. I equate it more to like a sheriff type thing. Like they have police in like what they call the silts. Mm-hmm. They have police there, but they don't really care about the people in the cells. Like, it's kind of just like a ghetto swamp place. So they just kind of let people mind their own business. So Bianca basically runs the swamp. And she keeps everything in order. I finished that one. I think I gave it 4 stars. Let me go check.
It says you gave it 3.
Okay, 3. I was vacillating between 3 and 4. Like I said, the magic system kind of confused me. I still don't quite understand how the magic distribution stuff works.
You're like, I know that it works, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 or 4, somewhere in there, probably 3.5 would be more accurate. Another recent read was A Fate Inked in Blood by Danielle L. Jensen.
Great.
This is the Saga of the Unfated, Book One. Unlike you, I knew this was Book One and that it had just been published with no information about Book Two. I knew what I was getting into. I read it anyway. Thoroughly glad I did. It was a real good time. It's based on Vikings.
Oh, we talked about this in a chat too.
Yeah. I think. You basically need like a chart of every single Viking god and lesser god and even lesser gods known.
Didn't I send you one that I found just because it was funny? It was like stick people or something. It was so funny.
Well, see, and some of the gods in this book are not on the charts that any of y'all sent. Like, I was just Googling who these random gods were in Viking mythology, and I was like, okay. Like, you really need a good understanding. They need, for real, in the book, I wish they would have, you for real need to look up who these gods are.
I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think as far as like putting things in the book, I wish people would, like a family tree or a you know, this god is the father of the, you know, something that'd be nice.
Yeah. There was a really good story. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And the book is so pretty.
It is very pretty.
The edges are sprayed. They're blue, but they're not just regular blue. They're like a shiny metallic blue. And you don't get shiny metallics on books a lot. So I was very excited about that.
This is another one that when I saw people getting the PR boxes, I was like.
But we don't have any information about when book two is coming out. So I'm just going to be on hold for a while. I will say that book, like I knew it was Viking. So I knew it was going to have a little bit of violence in it. I was not prepared for the amount of violence that was going to be in that book. It was very bloody. So that's your trigger warning for that. Like in your first, I think it's in the second chapter, you get someone getting axed in the back of the head. So
if I made it through Butcher and Blackbird, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah. like you, I did not buy anything new on my shelves right now is from the library.
Mm-hmm.
Two such books is The Enigma of Room 622 by Joelle Dicker. Let me pull up Room 622. I'll pull up the synopsis real quick and read it. Why is Goodreads being dumb? Okay, there we go.
I don't know. It was doing this to me earlier, and I was like,
So, one night in December, a corpse is found in room 622 of the Hotel Verbier, a luxury hotel in the Swiss Alps. A police investigation begins without definite end, and public interest wanes with the passage of time. Years later, the writer, Joelle Dicker, Switzerland's most famous literary ingenue, arrives at that same hotel to recover from a bad breakup and mourn the death of his longtime publisher and begin his next novel. Little does Joelle know that his expertise in the art of the thriller will come in handy when he finds himself investigating the crime. He'll need a Watson, of course. In this case, that would be Scarlett, the beautiful guest and aspiring novelist from the next room, who joins in the search while he tries to solve another puzzle, the plot of his next book. So this intrigued me, one, because the author of the book is in the book. I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to be solving mysteries. We're obviously dealing with some like personal stuff going on. So and the cover was really cool. It's like a dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's from the library.
I saw that on Goodreads and I wondered, I was like, what is that? What did she read?
And then I picked up this next one. Let me go ahead and pull it up so I can read the synopsis on it. At the recommendation of Peruse Project, her name is Reagan, YouTube. She really enjoyed this book and recommended it, so I figured I would try it. It's called Severance by Ling Ma. Candace Chen, a millennial drone self-sequestered in a Manhattan office tower, is devoted to routine, so she barely notices when a plague of biblical proportions sweeps New York. Then Chen fever spreads. Families flee, companies halt operations, the subway comes to a halt. Soon, entirely alone, still unfevered, she photographs the eerie abandoned city as the anonymous blogger NY Ghost. She can't make it on her own forever, though. Enter a group of survivors led by the power-hungry IT tech Bob. They're traveling to a place called the facility where Bob promises they will have everything they need to start society anew. But Candace is carrying a secret she knows Bob will exploit. Should she escape from her rescuers? So it's very science fiction-y, dystopian-y, post-apocalyptic type scenario.
We couldn't come up with another name other than Bob.
Well, I'm hoping this post-apocalyptic story is better for me than The Road was. So
I normally enjoy them, so maybe
I do too. But those are not all of my recent reads and acquisitions. Oh, there is one other I wanted to mention. Okay. I finished The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern.
Ooh.
I would describe this book as a mix between Alice in Wonderland and I don't know what else I would mix it with, but it had a lot of Alice in Wonderland type elements. Like, our main character just blindly follows whatever the characters tell him to do. You have various elements of eat this, drink this, and you don't know the effects of that's going to happen. You have random doors that you don't know what's going to happen if you open or go through a door. Like, it's all very fantastical. And it's set up like in the quote real world, but then the veil is taken back and you realize that there's more to this real world than there actually is. It did get to a point. It reminded me of the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie where it got a little bit too over the top where I couldn't quite buy into it anymore, if that makes sense. Kind of like when Jack was marooned on that island and basically dead in the third Pirates movie and you're like, what's happening? How are we going to get out of this type scenario? That's exactly what happens in Starless Sea. Oh, I know what else I'd mix it with. That book that I read, that horror book.
That you just read?
My brain is working well today, ladies and gentlemen. It's green and has a crow on the cover of it.
Don't you do this to me.
Wayward.
It's not
Wayward. No, that's not it. What am I thinking of?
Wayward. There was a crow on the cover of Wayward.
A House with Good Bones. That's it.
Oh, I didn't read that one.
Oh, you didn't read that one? Oh, okay.
Mm-mm.
Well, it's also green and has a crow on the cover.
Oh, the Kingfisher book.
That I would. It gave a lot of the fantastical elements that House with Good Bones also had.
Interesting.
I think you would like Starless Sea. I think it would be right up your alley.
Well, Night Circus, her book Night Circus, I know a lot of people that were like, I didn't like it. What do you mean you liked it? It is one of my all-time favorite five-star reads.
See, I'm one of those, I didn't care for it.
I loved it so much. Like, I read it, and then I read it again, like, almost immediately. Yeah, when it came out. But
I did thoroughly enjoy Starless Sea. I gave it 4 stars, I believe. I'm pretty sure I gave it 4 stars. I would read that again. It was good. The only reason I didn't give it 5 is because, like I said, sometimes the fantastical elements took it a little too far and I couldn't buy into it because it is supposed to be set in kind of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So when books do that, I'm like, but that's, I can't do that.
I feel like that's why you didn't like The Night Circus then, because it's extremely fantastical, right? It's extremely just different, but it's mainly set in the real world.
Yeah. And there were just some parts of it that just kind of dragged to me. Like at one point you're on a boat Mm-hmm. And you just stay on the boat. And I'm like, okay, I want to get off this boat now. Can we please stop talking about the boat anymore? Where there's one part where he's just exploring the hotel he's in. And I'm just like, okay, I've had enough exploring the hotel. Let's move the plot along a little bit, please.
I think that goes into your, you also don't like, sometimes you don't like detailed description. You're like, okay, I get it. I'm good. I'm done. And I'm over here like, tell me everything. What were the color responses?
I honestly think this would be a 4 or 5 star read for you. You would love it. So yeah, I think that's all I want to talk about.
Okay.
To wrap this up.
Yeah.
You can follow me personally on Instagram at @styleandfreak. And then you can also follow the podcast. It's Bells with Books Podcast. Also, join our Goodreads group where you can know what we're going to be talking about a week ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I post a little what we're currently reading. I update it like right before we start recording. So you can be in the know.
Yeah.
And where can we follow you, Miranda?
I am on Instagram and TikTok at Mom's a Nerd. Of course, we have the podcast itself on TikTok as well. Thank you to all of our new followers. I feel like we're kind of slowly organically growing and I'm happy about that. You can also join the Place to Be Facebook group. It covers pretty much all the podcasts that we have here on the Place to Be Nation family of podcasts. So come join us over there if Facebook groups are your thing. We do updates, different little tournaments, links to all of the other podcasts that are home here. A lot of the wrestling gang have discussions that, listen, I don't know what they're talking about, but they're pretty interesting. I'm like, I learned something new today. Didn't know that. My wrestling knowledge is very brief. I loved it a little bit in the 90s, and then I loved it again when The Rock became big, and then that's been about it. But it's enjoyable, so come join us over there. And remember, please, if you're interested in any of the books that we mentioned, but maybe you're driving or commuting and you just can't get to it, Bianca does a fantastic job. And she actually makes sure that every book that we mention is listed in the show notes. And if you, for some reason, can't remember which one is, like you're like, I know you talked about this book, but I can't remember which one it is, just drop us a note on any of our socials and ask us, you know, hey, which book was that again? What was the name and the title? We'd be glad to answer you. I feel like I had something else to say, and now my brain has said, no, ma'am, it is midnight. Can we please go to bed? So, for myself and Bianca and the entire Place to Be Nation family, thank you for being here with us. Thank you for listening, and always keep reading.